Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you today?
I'm grand this morning. We have a great guest coming on the show later. He is Todd Wickstrom. He was involved, I think he was involved in Slow Food USA. He was in the private sector, though. He and his partner, Patrick
Martins,
started Heritage Foods USA, which you can go to on the web. You can find him through our website and buy a lot of the ingredients that we're talking about. And we're going to talk about a pretty serious philosophical issue. And a lot of the food that we talk about from these family farms, family farmers are not getting rich, but just in order to stay on the farms and make this quality food, and by making quality food is the only way they can compete against big agribusiness, they turn out what are necessarily not inexpensive produce. The produce and the meats and stuff are more expensive. And, you know, we own this super high-end restaurant, and we can afford to eat this food whenever we want. The question is, how do we get good food into people's hands who maybe don't have the disposable income to buy whatever they want? So that's going to be interesting. We're going to be talking with him about that a little bit later in the show.
Well, as we were talking about, you know, trying to make organic foods and better foods and heritage foods more accessible to the populace, it was funny. I was thumbing through the New York Times a little while ago on May 12th, and I noticed two articles, and they were put right next to each other in the New York Times.
Yes.
Actually, you know, they weren't on the face page, they weren't right next to each other. But as you turn to page two of the article, they were right next to each other. And I'll tell you the title of the two articles. The first one was Walmart Tries to Enlist Image Help. And it was an article about the fact that Walmart wants to be, have a better image than the big bad superstore. They want to have a better image than that.
They control 1% of the gross domestic product. That's going to be hard. But they have the resources to try.
Exactly. Anyway, right next to that, I saw that another article about Walmart, and it said Walmart eyes organic foods.
You know what? I don't care why they're doing it, but you know what this says to all you people out there who are saying, yeah, I know that corporate agribusiness is saying synthetic hormones aren't a problem in milk, but you know what? I don't want it anyway. And when you do that, and they still resist you, and they call you stupid and hippie, and, you know, hippies, but you know, when the soccer moms out there are saying, I want organic milk for my kids, and that's what I'm buying, and I don't care if it costs more. Well, guess what? Then Walmart says, you know what? You know, Whole Foods is taking away too much of our market, and they enter the game as well. And when Walmart starts buying organic milk, as they have, guess what happens? More people are producing organic milk. And that is, you can correct, if you listen to this show and you're a supporter of the kind of food that we propose, that's a move in the right direction.
Well, later in the show, I think Todd's going to talk more about some other angles to this problem. But at the same time, I sit here and I look at this problem and I say, well, what are we creating? And we talked about this just a couple of weeks ago with somebody. When you go into ShopRite and all of a sudden you see that organic food section getting bigger and getting bigger and getting bigger, and you see organic produce now in nearly every really big supermarket, certainly in this area, and those sections are getting bigger, and the prices are now starting to get a little closer.
Right.
For the organic apples versus the regular apples, or the organic pears versus the regular pears. Organic bananas right now, and I don't know what it takes to make an organic banana, but my guess is not a lot.
There's a joke there. I just can't think of it. Go ahead.
But organic bananas are exactly the same price as the regular bananas. And what I think we see is that by a lot of us who can't afford to spend the extra money on this, spending a little bit extra on it, what we're creating is a marketplace for these products. And I believe as we create more of a marketplace for these products, in turn, more and more people will do them, and in turn, the prices will come down.
I agree.
Because Walmart's not stupid. Okay, Walmart is very smart and very effective. So If you make, and I think this is what we have to do. We have to make it in Walmart's financial interest, because Walmart's not going away. I'm not an idiot. I'm not trying to compete against Walmart. Okay. I've got to enlist Walmart's help in this. Okay. If we're going to combat all the problems that we're talking about, Walmart is going to be a player in this, sure. in this movement.
And
okay.
That, and
one
that's...
way or another. But I think that the best way to make them a player in the movement, and the only way, is to make it in their financial benefit to become a player in this movement.
The fact of the matter is, look, if you remain educated and you have great taste out there, you the consumers I'm talking to, if you have and that's why we do this show, and that's a lot of why we do this show, is if you have great taste, if you say, you know what, I'm not eating this pasteurized processed cheese food anymore, I'm going to eat cheese. And I don't want synthetic hormones and antibiotics fed to the cows that produce my milk. That's what I want as a consumer, then... What's going to happen is the big people are going to – what they're initially going to try and do is try to convince you you're stupid and keep buying the cheapest stuff that they can produce. Mm-hmm. But if you say, no, I have great taste. This is what I'm going to eat, and this is what I'm going to buy. And if you, Mr. Big Corporation, can't do it, I'll start buying from somebody else. Well, those big corporations will eventually turn around and listen.
And I want to make sure that what we understand here is that while we need to buy the organic Rice Krispies, which are now coming out on the market, mm. or the organic Kraft macaroni and cheese, which is now coming out on the market, that we still are that and that we may buy them in Walmarts across the country, that we still need to support the organic farmer. We still need to support the small family farmer. No matter what happens, and no matter whether or not Walmart comes into this marketplace or not.
When the big players come into the market, one of the things you got to realize is they have huge, 1% of the gross domestic product is Walmart's income, okay, bigger than many, many, many countries. They might have a lobbyist or two,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And so they start to influence what is and isn't considered organic. And we have to be very careful and very vigilant. And the other thing about...
Francis is talking about there that we have to be careful about letting standards degrade for organic.
Right.
Letting standards degrade for what is certified humane or whatever the standards may be. Once it becomes financially important for these large businesses to get into...
The word organic on the label.
To have organic on the label, exactly.
They're going to try and do that as cheaply as possible.
They'll do it as cheaply as possible, and that's what we got
to
find.
And the cheapest way may be to pay a lobbyist big dollars to have him lobby to weaken what the word organic means legally. And the other thing, like, I want to point something out. I think organic is healthier. I'm against genetically modified foods. I think that's healthier and healthier for the planet. But something that you... need to look at in part of how we buy, and it's part of the way that we buy the best food. Organic food can be made on a somewhat large scale, but buying locally is important as well. Buying from your local farmer, buying what's seasonal around you, buying stuff that you know where it comes from, that's important because it's good food, and that's something that's a little different than organic. So buying locally is another important issue.
And supporting the family farmer, supporting the small farm, supporting that kind of biodiversity that we're searching for, that the world needs. Buy four different, you know, we've talked about Indyke Farms, and we'll talk about them again later in the coming weeks. He has four different kinds of strawberries that all have different flavor profiles.
Right.
Well, the Driscoll strawberries in your supermarket don't have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyway, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Todd Wickstrom from Heritage Foods USA about this very paradigm. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Todd Wickstrom. Todd was intimately involved in Slow Food USA, a company that he helped to start is Heritage Foods USA, where you can find some of the best sustainable heritage breeds, organically raised food in America.
Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So, Todd, you've been on the show before, and it was great to have you. And in the spirit of full disclosure, we should let everyone in the restaurant audience know that both of our restaurants, Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, use a lot of these products. Heritage Foods is a natural for us because we support a lot of this food because philosophically, and also it's the best tasting food that you can possibly get. But Todd,
yeah, I got to tell you, Todd, we'd probably support you even if it wasn't philosophically aligned with us. Just because it tastes so darn good.
Right.
Oh, that's great.
Well, now, you sent some emails recently, though, and you can go to Heritage Foods USA and get on their mailing list and get some of these very interesting emails. It's not just for people in the industry only. But you sent an email recently where you talked about a certain issue, and I want to talk about an issue overall, and I'll paraphrase it. I don't remember exactly where this quote comes from, but I think it was you quoting somebody else in your email. And there's a paradigm set up where, you know, the large agribusiness firms can produce food more cheaply than the family farm. So the only way the family farm can stay alive is to produce niche market food, specialty food, and a lot of the demand is for organic food, or food raised without hormones or antibiotics, humanely raised food. And so that's how the small family farm, you know, basically holds on to their land. But it creates a certain paradigm where, and this is a quote from you, I believe, where immense companies produce unhealthy food for the poor and get rich, while small family farms produce exquisite food for the rich but remain poor. And let me go over that again. You've got big companies making food that's not good for you that most people eat, including people who don't have a lot of money. And then you have poor farmers who the only way they can even stay on their farm and don't usually wind up getting rich from it is to make exquisite food for rich people. And that's an interesting and troubling paradigm. Can we talk about that for a while?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's really sort of what I've been spending the last few months and really tried to devote my life to now is trying to figure out, you know, how do you get fresh and healthy foods to be affordable and get them to the people that need them the most? And I think that, you know, there's a lot of issues. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, in terms of political issues and in terms of subsidies and sort of who's getting money for what work and that sort of thing. But the bottom line is that, you know, in this country and in my backyard in particular, which is what really spurred this whole thing on, I mean, it's very, very difficult to find fresh and healthy food. The city of Detroit, up until the hurricanes hit, was ranked the number one city in the country in terms of poverty. There was a study done by the University of Michigan that identified, you know, went in and took a look at the population, the community, and identified that the city of Detroit is large enough to support 41 grocery stores of 40,000 square feet or larger. And at the time, which was only about 2 years ago, there was only actually 5 grocery stores that were larger than 20,000 square feet.
Yeah, and you know, it's very interesting about how, and it's not just, look, if you go to a wealthy suburb, you can find fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a neighborhood in Jersey City, which is now a very nice neighborhood, but when I first moved in and shortly before I moved there, it was sort of a marginal neighborhood. You could walk within 4 blocks of my house and get any kind of fast food you want, any kind of canned food you want, any kind of candy bar, processed food you want, but I'll be damned if you were going to find a peach, you know?
Exactly.
How do we turn that paradigm around? I mean, because, well, let's start with that, just fresh and healthy food, and then, you know, we talk about organics that are more expensive. How do we get that into the hands of people who maybe can't afford it?
Well, I wish there was a really easy answer, and unfortunately I don't think there is. You know, I sit on this Michigan Food Policy Council and was appointed by the governor to be on this organizing group to try to take a look at these issues, and so we've helped commission some studies and have had a lot of people present information to us. And, you know, if you really look at some of the neighborhoods and some of these areas that have the most dire need, a lot of those people there are buying food with food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And problem is the way that the food stamp system is set up, especially here in the state of Michigan, but in the majority of states actually in the country, is that the food stamps are only issued once a month. And so there's this huge boon for these grocery stores for the first 9 days of the month, but after that there's no customers that are coming back in.
Wow.
Can't we use that? I mean, and I hate to force people to buy a certain product or another, but couldn't we do something with the food stamp program where a certain amount of it is geared towards fruits and vegetables, a certain amount towards, you know, you get a certain amount of food stamps for different types of food groups?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with that is just management, and it's, I mean, like you said, it's difficult to sort of dictate to people what they eat and when they're buying it, and how do you know they didn't buy, you know, extra produce mm-hmm. last month and freeze it, and you know.
I don't know how I feel about telling people what they have to or not have to eat anyway. I'm not, you know, I'm not crazy about that anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, that there's a lot of issues. I mean, there's a lot of issues that, you know, don't have any easy answers. And I think that, you know, the biggest solution for us, I mean, there's two things. I mean, it's sort of this strange sort of dichotomy. I mean, it's almost like polarized goals that I'm working on. One is to increase revenues for small family farmers, and the other one is trying to figure out how do you make those foods affordable.
I think that is the largest philosophical dilemma facing people who care about family farms and care about good food and care about people all at the same time and want to create a good business model that works. We're going to be talking more about that with Todd Wickstrom. He's one of the founders of Heritage Foods USA. He was involved in Slow Food USA, which we're involved with, and more on this interesting discussion in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Kathleen showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and stage left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagut and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Todd Wickstrom. And we're talking today about the idea that, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is keep these family farmers on the farm, which necessitates that they make enough revenue to stay on the farm while corporate agribusiness can produce food cheaply. But this healthy, nutritious, flavorful food that they're producing is often only consumed by people of means because it's more expensive. And we were talking about how to get healthy food to and flavorful food and maybe locally produced food to poor people and even working class people who, you know, just don't have the extra 25% to spend on their groceries.
And to the inner cities at the same time as well.
Exactly.
On the inner city topic, I have a friend who worked at a green market that she did near a public assistance office, and the idea was to provide, you could use your food stamps in New Jersey to buy this produce and vegetables, et cetera, and so forth. But there's a cultural issue as well, because here you're turning up with all these vegetables in this welfare office with all these people from other countries and people who aren't used to cooking with this kind of food, and they would have these wonderful vegetables, and the people would say, what do I do with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I cook it?
Exactly.
And that presents a whole different problem.
Yeah, and I think that actually you hit on it. For me, that's almost a bigger issue than the rest of it. I mean, if you talk about price and just focus on price for a second, as you talked about some of these, you know, what I would call a food desert, you know, you can have these communities with lots of liquor stores and fast food restaurants, but like you said, trying to find the peach is next to impossible.
I think food desert is a great expression for that.
Well, I think that, you know, what's happened, though, is that those convenience stores and liquor stores that are selling food at organic prices anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying a premium to go buy the food in some of those convenience stores or those local markets anyway that aren't selling food.
Well, and the problem is, and we're going to have to break for the news, but the problem is, because we run businesses in urban areas, you know, like you have the small farmers, those local convenience stores, they're barely staying afloat, well, not barely staying afloat, but they have a hard time, they can't operate on the same markup as a supermarket because they're tiny as well.
Or even a 7-Eleven.
Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to talk more about this very serious issue with Todd Wickstrom from Heritage Foods USA. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Todd Wickstrom. Todd is with Heritage Foods USA. He was instrumental in founding Slow Food USA, and we're talking today about the idea or the paradigm that's been created where poor people and working class people and people who are concerned with a budget have a tough time getting all of this local produce and the sustainably produced food from small farms that we're talking about. And while the farms are having a tough time staying open. You know, we touched on an issue that I really want to get into. I study Irish history when I was in college, and I like it. And one of the things that happened when there was the potato blight in Ireland is that there was the underclass had always eaten, the Irish poor, the peasant farmers, had always eaten basically nothing but potatoes for three generations because they were so shabbily treated. And so there were some governments, not the British government, but there were some governments who tried to help. And they sent over different foodstuffs, and the ships would land. But one of the problems was they would show up with these foodstuffs from foreign lands that the Irish peasants, they had lost all the art of cookery. They had no idea what to do with it.
Right. You bring okra into my Italian-American mother's kitchen, and she's going to say, okay, throw that away.
Right. And I think we're facing a similar kind of problem in that people aren't educated as the difference between good food and bad food. And, you know, the way you get a McDonald's hamburger is you walk into McDonald's, you give them a buck, and they give you a hamburger.
Yeah, I think it really is more about convenience, and it's really this knowledge that we're losing, and you know, we're losing it so rapidly, it's just gut-wrenching. And I went to go help teach this class to these WIC participants, you know, women, infants, and children, these young girls that were 14, 15, and 16 years old, and you know, all of them were pregnant, and so part of the idea was to go help teach them some of these culinary skills and traits. And so the very first day of class, I brought in this fresh chicken, and I put it in front of them, and I said, what do you guys want to do with this today? And most of them they didn't even want to touch it. They thought it was gross. They thought it was, you know, they didn't want to get their hands slimy and wet. And so
because they're so used to the processed chicken nuggets.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, what we did with that class was really help them understand some different things about food and how to cook. And unfortunately, it was only like a 6 or 8 week class, so there's only so much you can do in 1 hour over a course of 6 weeks. But the idea is, I think that that's something that we're desperately missing in this country. And I mean, the rich people are just as bad as the poor people in terms of knowing how to cook.
Well, the thing is, though, if I'm rich, I can afford to have someone else cook for me.
That's the point.
And
or at least I can watch Rachel Ray cook for me.
Exactly.
But the issue, I think, here when we talk about cost. To go when things are available, and there is an issue of availability and distribution here, but the idea of what you just said, yeah, it's more expensive to cook an organic chicken. Not crazy more expensive, but it's definitely more expensive to cook a big organic chicken.
I mean, it's significantly more expensive.
Definitely. It's way more expensive to go to the nice restaurant and get the organic chicken than it is to go get the chicken McNugget. But frankly, it's not that much more expensive to cook an organic chicken and have it be 2 days' worth of meals than it is to go and get the chicken McNuggets.
Yet
people are going to get the chicken McNuggets because it's easier. And
yeah.
I think when we lose our food heritage, we lose the ability in our sons and daughters and nephews and nieces who don't have the ability to cook for themselves, and they become dependent on fast food and restaurant meals, which is bad for them, but it's bad for them in so many ways.
Yeah, we're actually, I mean, it's gotten to the point now that there's a lot of people that are paying attention to it and trying to figure out what to do, you know, about these issues. And for me, I mean, I love what we're doing with Heritage Foods and helping to protect these breeds and work with the farmers is great. But for me, it's just sort of getting dull and boring to hang around a bunch of these foodies, you know, talking about this esoteric balsamic vinegar that's $150 that, you know, goes really good on the sliver of Parmigiano Reggiano, which all may be great.
Todd, that's not so boring for me.
Yeah, we're those guys, man. You're talking to those guys, totally. But I'm sorry, but go ahead.
But I'm just saying, you know, that there's no real social merit in that, and it's great for, you know, I guess from a gastronomic point of view. But if you look at citizens and what's really happening, that I don't think that there can be just sort of, it's too far gone for just sort of subtle course corrections. I mean, there needs to be some more radical things that happen. And one of the things that I'm trying to do here is to create this ballot initiative in the state of Michigan, that by 2008, we need to get on this statewide ballot initiative to change the Constitution about these issues, about food.
To change the Constitution in what way? What would it require?
It's called the Declaration of Interdependence, and what it's going to do is to mandate that the foods that are sold to the schools are local and organic, Basically, it's very rare. I'll email it to you guys, and you guys can pass it on to other people. But the idea is to take a look at what's really happening in this state, in this economy, in terms of the effect of diet on health, and what's happening in terms of obesity and type 2 diabetes, and how much money we're spending in terms of, you know, missed work days because of the health of the citizens, et cetera, and saying that, you know, the best way to help counteract that is to get everybody to start taking care of themselves better and eating better foods. And so it's basically creating a mandate that will maintain that all the state institutions are buying from small farms, you know, local organically produced foods. And so what we need to do to make that happen is to get 500,000 signatures. And what's great about this as an issue is it really cuts across every category. I mean, you can be a Republican, you can be a Democrat, male, female, doesn't make any difference, Baptist, Buddhist, everybody is, you know, getting more and more concerned on a daily basis about their food.
Well, I agree completely, and I think that, frankly, we need more good food in our society, and a lot of our ills, our social ills, both physical and physical ills and social ills, can go back to our diet, I believe. And we're eating all sorts of stuff that, I mean, we didn't eat before. We didn't eat and processed in ways and grown in ways that have never happened before, and we have all sorts of health ills that we've never had before. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to make a connection between those two, but I want to address another point that you made. It is interesting with the whole, I mean, look, Heritage Foods USA is coming out with, you know, heritage breeds of pigs that are very expensive. And, you know, to support these family farmers who are not getting rich, but just to keep them on the farm, it costs a lot of money, and they are the best. And
just for the fact that the pigs are twice as old as an agribusiness pig, if for no other reason than that.
Twice as long to get your money back.
Right.
So that creates these great foods that find their way into Stage Left Restaurant, which is not an inexpensive restaurant, and the B cuts and the tertiary cuts find their way into Catherine Lombardi restaurants, which is not an inexpensive casual restaurant. But by keeping taste alive, and I think that's one of the things about this show, we talk about sustainable agriculture and small producers and family farms, and the issue we're talking about today is how we get more good food to people who aren't wealthy.
Yep.
But the idea is we need to keep good taste alive. We need to that small artisan that makes that 20-year-old balsamic vinegar that is very expensive, it's important to have that issue of quality and not to lose taste, because I think good taste is the basis from where we're going to build this and spread this type of food to the rest of the population. But yeah. But I think it's important to preserve the heritage. I mean, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and the more I think about it, too, is you know, one of the things that happened during the course as I was teaching that class to those girls in the WIC program is that we created this incentive so that at the very end of the class you would be able to go take $10 and go to the grocery store and you had to buy a meal for four people and you had to plan it before you got there. And so at the very end they did a great job and they really came back with a lot of fresh food and, you know, there's no processed food and they did a fantastic job of coming up with this menu. But then the more I got to think about it, I said, well, how far would that $10 have gone if we would have gone to Whole Foods?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so the idea isn't to tell people that they're second-class citizens if they're not shopping at Whole Foods or a very high-end organic grocery stores. And if you think about it, you know, there's 1 billion people that live in China that don't shop at Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
They eat great. And I think a lot of it is about, you know, just understanding those traditions and trying to buy your food fresh as much as possible on a daily basis and you know, eating more vegetables, and you know, you don't need to eat a lot of meat. So I think there's a portion issue, you know, that we have to eat a lot of food, a lot of this processed food, because it's not satiating. It's so full of sugars and mm-hmm. everything else.
I want to talk more about how we change the world and how we change this country and how we do things on a more mass level.
But we can do that in just a moment. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with Todd Wickstrom of Heritage Foods USA and also one of the founders of Slow Foods. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's an approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Todd Wickstrom, who's a friend of ours and owns Heritage Foods USA.
Todd, we talked earlier in the program about things like farm subsidies and things like that. Aren't we already subsidizing these small farmers? Aren't we already paying them to bring us cheaper organic foods and cheaper family? Aren't we paying the family farmer already?
I wish. We're paying big farmers. I mean, if you look at the subsidies that the government issues, it's crazy the way the system is set up. I think it was last year in 2005, you had people like Ted Turner that got $500,000 in subsidies because of the amount of land that he owns to help, produce his buffalo.
Well, you know, he's got to pay Chipper Jones to play third base.
He does, exactly.
You know, come on.
And the average small farmer, is getting maybe $1,000, $2,000, maybe $5,000. They're very small and just drops in the bucket of what the real need is for those farmers. So one of the ways that we're going to try to do this, as I said earlier, is this declaration of interdependence and really focusing on the issues and trying to get, to change the school lunch programs and to get the state to start to invest money into policies and encourage investment in agriculture, et cetera. One of the other ways we're trying to do that is I'm actually spearheading a group to go into the city of Detroit to open up an urban market.
That's great.
And to figure out, we're not going to open up a grocery store. We're not going to have the health and beauty aisle. You won't be able to get shampoo and, toilet paper. Or at least you won't have 30 choices of toothpaste and that sort of thing. But we will have wonderful fresh foods from these farms. So we're working at building infrastructure to get greenhouses and get those sort of things built in the city and around the city.
I think those are great programs.
And one of the ways to really get these foods to be cheaper is to cut out all of the middlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Heritage Foods is a middleman. So, but that's a different market, obviously, and a different mission. But if we can get foods to go direct from the farm straight to the counter at this marketplace, then we can cut out a lot of money in between.
When you bring this produce into these markets, how do you teach people how to cook it and how to use it? Because I think that, as we discussed earlier, you're fighting against not people who are buying other chickens and cooking them, but people who've never touched a chicken before in their lives and are used to chicken McNuggets.
Well, that's an excellent question. What we're trying to do is to really take a long-term approach to all of this, and what we want to do is to really go in and be a part of the community. And so we want to go to the grandmas that came up from the South, and really there are dying culinary traditions that are in those, neighborhoods and communities right now. And really through the schools and through everything else, really develop this sense of, how do you prepare foods on a budget that are not only, as you said earlier, most importantly, great tasting, but you can really stretch it. Like you talked about the chicken. The chicken, if you can prepare it, like you said, you can probably get a couple of meals out of it. Then if you know how to make chicken stock, you can get five or six meals out of it.
There's a couple more meals out of the bones and the vegetables that come from the...
Exactly. So one of the ways that we're looking at doing that is we kind of have on the drawing board creating this program that the only way to really describe it is sort of like the culinary Cub Scouts. And so the idea would be, to give kids these badges or rewards, and maybe instead of having the little blue jackets with a yellow necktie or whatever, they'll have chef coats. And the idea being, you know, partner with local chefs and parents and those sorts of things and give the kid a badge every time he tries something new.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Especially as chefs are becoming more and more royalty and pop stars, I think that perhaps we can influence some of the inner city, you know, less fortunate kids.
Exactly. And then just bring in the community, like here, you know, the Detroit Pistons, you know, music, rap, you know, the graffiti, all of that, and use what is relevant in that culture to make it become cool. And then, you know, really, I mean, it's not that difficult to change people's, you know, hearts through their stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as we can get them to learn a few of these simple basic lessons with foods that are available at decent prices, I think that the ramifications can be significant. It's just going to take, you know, it's not going to be one person that can do it or even one organization, but you're going to have a lot of people, you know, that have some way to become coalesced around this to be able to make that change.
And just as we're coming to the close of our segment here, I just want to reiterate that your company, Heritage Food USA, which is not focused on the affordable end of food, but focused on the best food available. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Heritage Food USA?
Absolutely. Well, Heritage Foods, we started 4 years ago, basically, just sort of as a turkey project with Slow Food USA, just mm-hmm. selling some heritage breeds of turkeys. And the first year we sold, I think, 700, and the next year we sold 1,500, and the year after that, 3,000, and it's kept growing every single year. And we had more and more people that would come to us and say, well, look, if you can sell rare breeds of turkeys, don't you think you could sell pigs and sheep and
the answer is yes.
Everything else? And so it's grown into you know, really a substantial movement. And you know, I was the managing partner of Zingerman's Deli in Ann Arbor, Michigan, for a number of years. And Patrick, my partner, was the founding executive director of Slow Food USA. And we both left those positions to start Heritage Foods USA, and really decided to become you know, not only a defender of these rare and endangered breeds of animals, but came to realize that what was mostly rare and endangered was the small family farmer themselves.
Wow. And you can go to Heritage Food USA. You can find the link on our website. It's been there, and it'll be there again. Where you can, as a consumer, buy directly from Heritage Food USA, and if you have restaurants out there, you can call them up and work out a wholesale project with them as well. Hey, we're coming up against the end of the hour. Thanks so much for being with us, Todd.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's really great. Todd Wickstrom, Heritage Foods USA. Check it out on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're with Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today was Todd Wickstrom from Heritage Foods USA. And we're talking about a very large philosophical issue. I hope we didn't bore you guys. But the idea that, you know, these organic foods which save the family farm, while not letting them get rich, but are letting people stay on the family farm, are very often very expensive. And so you have poor farmers selling to rich people and rich agribusiness companies selling non-nutritious foods to poor people. Interesting paradigm, and we've got to deal with
it. It is very interesting. And the whole fast food culture and the chips and nachos culture has changed the world, and not for the better. You know, I was talking to my brother-in-law this past weekend.
Yeah.
He had a little barbecue at his house.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking, I don't know if he saw it on television or he was talking to someone about it, but somebody was making a fire, old Boy Scout, Eagle Scout that he is making a fire with flint and steel.
Yeah.
And he said, and what the guy told him was, you know, if you ever don't have flint and steel and you're trying to start a fire and you only have a match or two,
yeah,
one of the things that you can use in its place is a corn chip. Like a Frito, you can, they'll actually light on fire and stay on fire for a little while, because the oil in them, and you can light fire with it and set your little.
Wait a second, you can strike a corn chip against a steel.
You can light it with a match. If you have one match and you have a lot of stuff to light, or you're very limited on matches, light a corn chip and then you can light a bunch of things with the corn chip.
So those would be the hot corn chips.
No, they don't have to. Well, they'd be hot after
right,
you lit them on fire.
Like,
but yeah,
isn't yeah
that,
well,
just, that was just amazing.
You know what I needed? You know what I was? I woke up this morning. I thought, if I only had one more piece of useless information in my head. And look, it's not even noon, and I've got it. It's that, super.
But it's from all the oil and the grease and the corn chips.
Yeah, but I mean, your salad dressing could do the same. It could be like beautiful
your
olive oil.
Salad dressing isn't lighting on fire.
Olive oil will light on fire.
Yeah. Fill in the expletive right there, okay? Fill it in.
The beginning of the show was so serious. We were doing so well, and we've ended with a little bit of silliness. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the restaurant guys. Again, Heritage Foods USA, you want to buy some of these great foods. HeritageFoodsUSA.com. You can find them through RestaurantGuysRadio.com. They're not cheap, but they're really good. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.